Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, everyone, and welcome to Tech Stuff. This is Jonathan Strickland, your host extraordinaire.
And I'm Lauren Volkbaum, the first and only member of the Society for the Prevention of Hedgehog Underrepresentation.
Okay, then.
It's a true fact. You can look it up on the internet.
Will do. All right, so Lauren, ask me how I'm feeling.
How are you feeling, Jonathan?
I'm exhausted, Lauren.
Yay! Wait.
I'm barely able to string two coherent sentences together.
Why is that, Jonathan?
That would be because I just returned, as in within the last 48 hours, from CES in Las Vegas, Nevada. We live in Atlanta, Georgia, which is nowhere near Las Vegas, Nevada, has a totally different time zone.
Yeah, yeah. Tricksy that. CES being the convention formerly known as the Consumer Electronics Show.
Yep. Now they're just known as CES. And this is where companies come to show off the product lines that they want stores to carry. So, I have a friend. There's going to be a lot of name dropping, or potentially a lot of name dropping in this episode, and I want to warn everybody about that. I'm friends with Nate Langson, who is the editor of Wired.co.uk, former CNET employee. Nate is a great guy. I got to meet him in person for the first time at this CES. And Nate's perspective, as we were walking around, he was saying to me, Jonathan, what I don't understand is that why are these booths here that have these iPod cases? I mean, why would they even bother? And he doesn't actually sound like that because I mean, he'd be from the south of London and he's not. But I said, well, Nate, you know, you have to understand that a lot of these manufacturers are actually here in the hopes of getting their products carried in various catalogs and in retail stores. It's, yeah, suppose I just look at the world as if it's all meant for me. And I said, actually, Nate, so do I. So we shared something in common. But I do understand, you know, that's the purpose for the event is to get in front of the press and in front of retail establishments to say, hey, here's all the stuff that's going to come out this year. Isn't it pretty and shiny and don't you want it?
And quite a few people do this. There's more than 3,000 exhibitors as of 2012.
Yeah.
This was the 2013 show, so these numbers are very slightly outdated. And they are crammed into 1.9 million net square feet of exhibit space.
Yeah, and there are about 150,000 people attending. And it really felt pretty crowded this year. There have been past CES shows where attendance was down, especially right after the recession. A lot of companies ended up not being able to go. They weren't able to afford the space.
Sure.
They wanted to, you know, they were having a bad year. Might not have been the best time to show off.
According to Wired, it costs like $150,000 minimum for everyone but the smallest vendors to set up a booth and, you know, fly people out there, feed them for the week.
Sure. I mean, and some of these booths are incredibly elaborate. I mean, things like LG had a very elaborate booth, Samsung, Sony, Panasonic. You know, the big names in electronics you would imagine have a fairly large presence. Now, there were a couple of exceptions. Microsoft famously did not have a booth this year. Normally, you would walk into the central hall at the Las Vegas Convention Center, which has three major halls, a north hall, central hall, and a south hall. The south hall actually has two floors. This is a huge amount of space.
Yeah.
Now, the central hall, usually if you walked in from the main entrance, you would have Intel on your right and Microsoft on your left. Microsoft took it easy this year. They decided not to come in and play. Mm-hmm. And instead, Hisense was on the left, and Dish Network was also on the left. So Microsoft had withdrawn from the show, although that didn't stop Ballmer from showing up at a keynote.
In the keynote, yes, yeah. The Qualcomm keynote.
Yeah, there were some people who said it was a Ballmer keynote, and he had his buddy from Qualcomm there. And
oh.
I would not go so far as to say that, but some other folks on Twitter were saying such things.
Well, I've heard it was a little bit wackier than Microsoft ever quite got with a keynote. There's some really entertaining videos about the sort of antics that went on. And, you know, Big Bird showed up.
Yeah, that's gangsta. When you got Big Bird coming out throwing down sweet rhymes.
I'm not positive. I think I'm that word.
What? The Big Bird? He comes from the streets?
Oh, he comes from a street, not the streets.
Oh, well, he lived life on the street, okay? He's at least as gangsta as Vanilla Ice was. Can you grant me that?
Yes,
stop,
sure.
Stop, collaborate, and listen, okay? All right, so, yeah, Big Bird was there. Maroon 5.
Yeah.
There.
Who in the podcast and in the live streaming were overdubbed by Dido, I believe.
Were they?
Because they didn't have the rights, I guess, to stream Maroon 5.
Wow, that's kind of interesting.
It was
I was not aware of that.
From everything that I've seen, it was just like everything that is insane about the internet live on stage, and I'm not positive that that's what Qualcomm meant to do.
Right. Well,
it was pretty great for me to watch anyway.
there were tons of interesting moments. I mean, there were a lot of celebrities there. I saw Danny DeVito.
Oh yeah.
He was wearing an It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia baseball cap.
Cool.
And but I didn't get to chat with him. He was very far away and on top of a stage, and I have a feeling that if I had gone up to say hi to him, some very large men would have very
prevented you.
Very gently but firmly discouraged me from doing that. But Danny DeVito was there. You know, there were other performers. 50 Cent was there. Exhibit was there.
I know Felicia Day was running around.
Felicia Day was the Entertainment Matters ambassador
Wow.
to CES 2013.
Cool.
She had one of her fans made a sash for her, and she wore that the entire time.
That is delightful.
I am told. I didn't run into Miss Day this time. Mm. I have met her in the past, but did not see her this time. LL Cool J was there, but we were not allowed to call it a comeback. There were a lot of performers there because a lot of them also lend their names to particular products, or they endorse specific products, or they are there to help bring even more attention to a specific company. I mean, this is the company's chance, any individual company's chance to grab that spotlight, but they're competing against everybody else.
Yeah.
So you've got to pull out a lot of stops.
Room full of 3,000 spotlights and everyone trying to...
Right. Just you're rubbernecking all over the place trying to see what the next big thing is. And so you really are struggling to try and capture that attention.
So what were some of those next big things?
Well, let's talk about... It's easiest probably to talk about this in terms of product categories.
Groups of stuff.
Yeah, because we could go company by company, but that just gets really confusing. So let's talk about TVs, first of all.
Sure.
Now, televisions, that's always a big thing at CES.
They're big. They're shiny. I mean, you can...
Yeah. And they're getting pretty darn big. There were more than a few 84-inch sets on the show floor.
That's a bunch.
Yeah. And there was a 100-inch TV as well that I saw. So, I mean, these are not... Those aren't typical. Most of the ones you see tend to be still huge. Like there were a lot in the 60 to 70-inch range.
Wow.
There were a few that were OLED screens that were more like in the 55-inch. But that's huge, too, because huge in a different way. a few years ago when my former co-host and I, Chris, when we first went, the very first year I went to CES, I remember that the two of us marveled over an OLED display that was 11 inches.
11?
Yeah. And it was, and you sit there and look at it and you knew that it was never going to market. This was just a prototype.
Sure.
Now we're seeing 55-inch TVs with OLED displays that are becoming more and more of something that we're going to see come to market, including ultra-high definition displays. We're talking 4K resolution. So four times the 1080p resolution that we consider high definition. This is ultra-high definition. This is incredibly vibrant colors, great. Like, you can get right up onto the screen and stare at it, and you can't see the pixelation. It's pretty phenomenal stuff. You have a pretty high refresh rate, so it's refreshing the image at a very fast rate so that you've got this very smooth motion. If any of you went out and saw The Hobbit in the 48 frames per second, you know what high frame rate looks like.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that. It's great for stuff like sports. It's a little distracting in some other forms of entertainment as far as I'm concerned, just mm-hmm. because it gives a sort of glidey, unreal. It's weird to say unreal because it's very real.
Because it's extremely real,
but not cinematic or it doesn't feel like TV anymore.
Right. Well, you know, it's whenever you're dealing with a film format that was not really intended to be shown at that resolution, you're going to run into issues like that. And I've heard that actually Sony, which is one of the companies that has one of these super high definition televisions out, is starting to put out 4K cameras.
Yes, there were 4K cameras out there on display on the show floor. They looked very heavy. These were big cameras, but Sony's actually leading the way in creating 4K cameras meant for the consumer. So not just the prosumer
the
professional.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because, you know, there have been 4K cameras available for a while.
Oh, sure.
But they were just within the grasp of movie directors.
Studios.
Yeah, we're talking like you had to have millions of dollars to get them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're still not cheap. They're thousands and thousands of dollars, but they're starting to get to a point where they are within the grasp of consumers who happen to have a good amount of discretionary income. But, you know, that's the thing is that we're seeing – this is the way technology works, right?
Uh-huh.
You see a new technology come out, and at first it's really expensive, and then as more people adopt it, manufacturing processes improve, things mm-hmm. get more efficient, and the prices start to come down. Same thing with Moore's Law. I mean, that's the basis of Moore's Law as well. But getting back to TVs,
mm-hmm.
ultra-high definition was the buzzword in TVs. I mean, everyone had an ultra-high definition television. Samsung showed off an 8K TV,
oof,
which was enormous and was really more of a prototype concept uh-huh. type thing. There's probably a point where the human eye will not be able to discern the difference in quality once you get to it beyond a certain resolution. We're just not, you know, most of us don't have the acuity to be able to see that kind of difference.
Sure.
But it means that you could create ever larger screens and not lose resolution, right? So it may not be good for a consumer, which is weird when you think of the name used to be Consumer Electronics Showcase, or show rather. It might not be for a consumer, but you might have an enormous display, say, in Times Square or Piccadilly Circus.
Yeah.
And you want to have an enormous display that has great resolution, and instead of having it made up of 15 screens, it's made up of one enormous screen. You could theoretically do that once you get that resolution cranked up pretty high. The biggest criticism I heard of the 4K TVs had nothing to do with the sets.
Mm-hmm.
It was, these are amazing TVs. The images are beautiful. Where is the content going to come from?
Huh.
Because without having someone to deliver the 4K content, you have a television that's capable of showing these amazing pictures, but it's not getting the information it needs in order to do that.
Right.
Nate Langston, again, he suggested that perhaps we might expect the next generation of video game consoles to support 4K.
Huh.
So they would become a reason for people to upgrade their TVs. Not that you could only see it in 4K, but
sure,
that they'd be capable of doing that.
I just made a face, and I think the face was me imagining playing a survival horror video game
in 4K resolution.
And that doesn't sound like a thing that I actually want to do at all.
It would be the blacks would be very, very true blacks on the screen. In fact, there was one OLED TV that one person said gave it a an infinite contrast ratio. And a contrast ratio, we're really talking about how true is the black on that screen.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because, of course, if you're using an old LCD screen, it's backlit. And mm-hmm. so anytime there's anything on the screen, anytime the set is on, there's a light behind the screen that's on. So there can be problems with backlit displays showing a true black on the screen because it tends to come out like charcoal gray.
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely.
But a lot of the sets there were more about representing true black on a screen.
Cool.
They also had there was the world's first curved OLED TV.
Yeah.
There were two of them.
I heard, did you get to see any of those?
I got
to
see both of them.
Both?
Yeah. See, here's the thing, is that you have LG, which had the world's first curved OLED TV, and you had Samsung, which had the world's first curved OLED TV.
Curiouser and curiouser.
Yeah, both companies were claiming that they had the first curved OLED TV. Why you would want a curved OLED TV, I'm sure there are reasons. And I'm sure they are valid, but I do not know what they are.
I've heard that that actually viewing from the sides gets easier with a curve.
That makes sense. I mean, at least for the majority of the screen, I would imagine if you get a little too far, then the curvature would mean that the side closest to you would be obscured.
But it's a very slight curve.
It is a subtle curve.
We're not talking about, you know.
Yeah, it's not like a.
It's not
like
conical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it is a very subtle curve. It's one of those things that if you're looking at it from the side, you can, like from profile, you can tell. But otherwise, it's not, like if you were looking at it dead on, it's not incredibly obvious.
Sure.
Both of them had it. And that's one of the things about the OLED screens is that you can create curved or even flexible screens depending upon the material you're using.
Cool.
So that was kind of neat. Let's take a quick moment to thank our sponsor. Now,
working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to the show.
Also, there was not as much of an emphasis on 3D this year.
Yeah. What was it, 2 years ago that 3D was just the buzzword and everyone was?
Yeah. 2 years ago, I would say, was probably the hardest push for 3D. Everyone had 3D. Last year, 3D was still important, and there were a few places that had the glasses-free 3D, which you know, requires that you are in a sweet spot to view it and get the 3D effect. 3D was not as – it was still present in several different sets on the floor, but it was not nearly as big a feature touted this year as it has been in years past.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that people have started to realize that not everyone is going to go out, run out and replace their entire television in order to get this content that really only exists in an extremely small sample size of the media that you can play.
Yeah, there's that. And I think there's also people who still resist any sort of television that would require them to wear glasses.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you have two choices. You have the active shutter lens glasses, which means that these are glasses that require to be recharge them.
They're battery operated.
Right. Or you have the passive ones, but either way, you have to keep track of them. I mean, I don't know about you, Lauren, but for me, it's very easy for me to lose my remote. I would hate to also lose the glasses I need to watch my TV.
Right, sure. And I, for me personally, I mean, I really avoid seeing movies in 3D whenever I can because it's kind of headachy and a little bit annoying.
For you, it can be for some people. I like the 3D effect. It's just that it's not a killer feature for me. Now, that being said, there was one company, Samsung, in fact, that had a dual vision television, a dual view TV.
Yeah, I heard about that. It's essentially a split screen television, except both screens are happening at the same time.
Right.
And depending on which pair of glasses you're wearing, it's projecting two images.
Right.
And two different people can sit in front of it.
And see two different things.
And see two different, and you're hooked up to headphones.
Yeah,
so you're each listening to your.
You can get, and there are two different variations of this too. You could get one that was active or you could get passive. In this case, the Samsung set I looked at was passive, meaning that, you would have one set of glasses that would have polarized lenses that are aligned in one way. And then you have a second set of glasses that be polarized but aligned like 90 degrees.
Like vertically difference. Versus horizontally.
Exactly. That kind of thing. And normally with a 3D set, you would have the same kind of setup, except you would have one lens polarized one way, the other lens polarized another way. So each eye accepts a different set of images. Your brain combines the two. That's what gives you the 3D effect. In this case, the implementation was different. Both eyes got the same set of images, but it was a different set of images than someone wearing the other pair of glasses.
Right.
So you could play a video game and you're looking at one screen and the person playing against you is looking at another screen. So imagine playing a game like there's this thing called football that I've heard about that sometimes a guy named Madden likes to play. Anyway, if you wanted to set a specific kind of play, like a Hail Mary pass is a thing, you could select that and you're wearing your glasses so you can totally see everything that you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
Your opponent is wearing a different pair of glasses. They can't see what you see. They're seeing their side.
Yeah.
So it keeps everything secret.
Yeah. So there's virtually no way to screen look.
Right. And also it would even allow you to do things like watch two different – theoretically, you could watch two different programs at the same time. But, of course, that does require that you have your own individual audio feed in. Otherwise, you would just hear a jumble of audio.
Of everything. Yeah. That would be.
Yeah. So while my wife was watching the documentary series Supernatural, I could be watching something a little more akin to my tastes, like I don't know – that Mitchell and Webb look, or Peep Show, both of which have David Mitchell and Robert Webb in them.
Jonathan, don't pretend that you don't like the documentary series Supernatural.
They are dreamy. They are dreamy, dreamy boys. But yeah, that kind of sums up. I mean, like, everyone had these different TVs. If you were to ask me who had the best TV out there, I could not give you an answer because we've reached a level of quality where it's beyond my ability to describe it to people.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you have to keep in mind that every single one of these companies spends a huge amount of time calibrating those televisions so that they look
perfect
in that environment.
Absolutely.
And you're talking about a big convention center where, you know, it's not going to have the same sort of viewing condition as you would in your house, probably. I don't think your house would have the same lighting as the convention center did.
Unless your house has 1.9 million square feet.
In which case, dude, hook us up.
Yeah, invite us over.
We will come for your barbecue.
I will bake you brownies.
There we go. But yeah, that was beyond TVs. I guess the next category, a big one, would be computers.
I guess computers are sort of a thing that people use, computers and tablets.
Yeah, computers, tablets. Yeah, everyone had tablets. There were a lot of different tablets out there, including a lot of Windows 8 tablets.
Yeah.
So people were starting to really start to show off the Windows 8 user interface and tablet format, which, you know, including a gaming tablet, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty impressive.
The big one that I heard of, and I literally big one, was Microsoft's Lenovo.
Yeah, the Idea Center table PC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want to say it's 27 inches. And it's an all-in-one PC. When it's vertical, it runs Windows 8.
Right.
So you've got it vertically aligned where it's, you know, like you could have it mounted. They had it mounted on like a cart kind of thing.
Okay.
But when it was vertically aligned, it was Windows 8. So it's that touchscreen user interface. It's running a full version of Windows 8. You could do all the things on it that you could do with a Windows 8 machine.
Except for pick it up and move it into another room by yourself, probably. But
it was a bit of a hefty device. But then when you would tilt it horizontally, it would switch to Lenovo's proprietary user interface, and it would become a Surface for you to play on. In fact, Surface is a great term. It reminded me a lot of the Microsoft Surface tabletop.
Right.
Which is now called PixelSense, I think. But, you know, now, of course, we think of Surface as the tablet, but before it was this big table thing. Well, that's kind of what the Lenovo Idea Center becomes. It's multi-touch and can detect up to 10 points of contact at once.
Yeah, it's good for games.
Yep, gaming, sharing media, sharing videos. You can have a bunch of people around staring at this table and playing with it. I thought it was interesting. And supposedly it's going to come out summer of 2013, but there are a couple things that kind of, I don't know, confuse me a little bit. One is that Lenovo's really known for doing these kind of hybrid things. Like, they've done the hybrid tablet computer stuff before.
Mm-hmm.
They've also been known to announce things that never quite make it out to stores. Like, there was the Lenovo U1 that I went crazy for like 3 years ago, and it never really came out.
Actually happened.
Yeah. So I'm a little cautious about this. Also, I don't know how compelling or useful it would be to the average consumer. It was interesting.
Oh, sure.
I really thought it was an interesting implementation of touchscreen technology, but I don't know. I can't think of a reason why I would get one.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a nifty toy, and I can see the sexy factor of having something in your home that you can share something. You know, share a cute YouTube video on without having to pull a phone out of your pocket and have it be of a size that you would actually want to watch it.
Yeah, but you could do that with a regular computer. It's just interesting that it makes it easier to share stuff, and it was very attractive to share stuff using the Lenovo user interface, but you can still do that on a computer without that,
yeah.
Which is why I was like,
also,
why?
Yeah, I mean, I would be afraid of the first time that, you know, one of my friends forgot that it was a really expensive piece of equipment and put their drink down on top of it or something like that.
Like hot coffee or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would worry about that too.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go, right? There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. On NPR's new podcast, Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's part existential deep dive and part game show. I ask actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to ask some of life's biggest questions. Listen to NPR's Wildcard on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There were other, like, a lot of Ultrabooks were still on display. We had Ultrabooks debuted at CES 2012.
Right.
They're still a thing. the sales for computers have not been great in 2000. They weren't great in 2012, and I'm not sure that they're going to improve significantly over the course of 2013.
Do you mean computers in general, or
computers
PCs
in general.
Or laptops or everything?
In general, computers, yeah. Like, tablets are pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But anything like a laptop or desktop, those have not been doing so well. And but there were still quite a few on display, and some of them were very gorgeous. I saw an Asus laptop that was incredibly thin at the edges.
I mean,
when you got to the they would taper off, right? The edges tapered off until you got to the very end, like the base of where the keyboard is, and you looked like you could get a paper cut. That's how thin it looked to the naked eye. But they also had some interesting prototype tablets out there, including 4K resolution tablets. I remember there was one that my friend Nate said was 5 pounds, and I said, that's a very reasonable price. And then he hit me. Actually, it was Ayaz Akhtar who hit me. This is another name drop. I'm sorry. I can't hold on to them. They just keep slipping out of my fingers.
Well, you just have so many really important popular friends that you can't really...
I don't know if they would call themselves friends. They're definitely popular and important, though. Yeah, these are great people. No, I met and chatted with a lot of really great people while I was out there. That was one of my favorite parts of CES, was getting the perspective of folks who also focus on very specific parts of technology, because I look at everything.
Sure.
So to hear someone who really concentrates on one area, I hear perspectives that I never thought about. That's great.
Absolutely.
Beyond computers, let's see, what else? Phones.
Phones.
They had some.
Smartphones are, you know.
They're a thing.
A thing.
Yeah. There were some nice ones on the floor. The Samsung Galaxy Note 2 was there. So if you like your phones the size of a small state. no, actually, people give the larger phones some attitude. They give them the business, as I like to say. They are big, but I actually really like them too. I mean, the Galaxy Note was one of those devices that I debated on picking up. I ultimately did not, but I almost did. It does bridge an interesting gap between smartphone and tablet, which is why we have the horrible word phablet.
Oh, no, no one say that. Don't. No, let's strike that from the collective consciousness, shall we?
I would much prefer tone.
Tone?
Yeah.
That's kind of nice.
Instead of a phone.
I like. No.
But still better than the tablet.
Let's just move.
Well, anyway, Samsung Galaxy Note 2 was there. That was nice. The Nexus 4, which has been available for a while, I should say. It's not like the Nexus 4 is brand new. The Nexus 4 from LG has been around for a while, but it was the first time I actually got to play with one, because those things go out of stock so fast that I can never get hold of one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's running the latest version of Android. And in fact, that's the big thing with the Nexus 4 is that you can actually buy it directly from Google, which makes it different from any other phone. And you can be fairly confident that as long as the hardware will support it, it will always run the latest version of Android. At least that's the assumption. Reality could play out differently. Samsung also had a flexible phone that wasn't on display, but they showed it off at their keynote.
Flexible phone, huh?
Yeah.
I heard that Sony had a waterproof phone.
The Xperia Z. Yeah, very pretty phone. The Xperia phones were very, very pretty to look at. And the Xperia Z was, they would dunk them into aquariums and show that they were still working just fine. There were quite a few. And tons and tons of phone accessories on the floor. So,
oh, sure.
Everything from special cases that have colorful designs on them to things like OtterBox, which specializes in protective cases, mm-hmm. including some that are, you know, dustproof, shatterproof, waterproof. I mean, you're talking like mega protective cases. They had some other cases I saw on display where people were doing things like essentially dropping bowling balls onto devices and showing how the cases were distributing the force in such a way to provide the maximum amount of protection with the minimum amount of damage. I say minimum because there still was some.
Because it's still a bowling ball.
It's still a bowling ball and it's still a phone. Yeah. And the other big, big category that I wanted to say would be about, smart appliances.
Smart. I keep hearing about this Internet of Things.
Yeah, that's part of it. Smart appliances, the definition is kind of tricky. Back in the day, we used to call it anything that connected to the Internet was smart.
Sure.
Or if it ran widgets, it was smart.
Oh, right. Or, you know, if you can download applications and
it
change the software.
Smart, yeah. Smart. Or if it connected to some other thing in your house, it was smart. And that's the thing is that there are a lot of different definitions for smart, and no one has really become the perfect example. There are a lot of different implementations.
At the end of the day, it's a marketing term and not you know, something FDA approved.
Right,
so
right.
That.
There were some interesting implementations. LG's approach was to include NFC technology. That's near field communication technology, which is that same stuff that lets you use your smartphone to pay for stuff, where you tap your smartphone against a little vendor's receiver and then it transfers the payment.
Sure. If you have a certain application, you can bump your phone against somebody else's and transfer
information.
Sure.
Yeah, like contact information, mm-hmm. or a message like stop hitting your phone against my phone. same sort of thing. NFC allows for this very near field communication. I mean, that's what it stands for. It lets devices that are very close to one another exchange info. It's usually very light as far as the data transfer is concerned.
Sure.
Well, in the case of LG, they had it where you have a smartphone, you tap it against your various appliances, like say your washer and dryer, and you could even do things like update your washer and dryer with new means of drying and washing your clothes. I didn't know that this was a thing.
Yeah, I never thought about the firmware of my washer and dryer or updating it, certainly. I'm still getting used to the fact that I can update my Xbox, so
yeah.
That, you know.
No, I'm right there with you, Lauren. I mean, I sat there and I thought about, like, is this telling me that, hey, I know a better way to agitate your clothing? I mean, I'm sure there's a real use case for it. It just seemed like it was a little bit of an interesting approach. Now, I should also say LG has built it in so that it makes registering your devices very easy. So that when you tap your smartphone, it's registered because it's already got all the information.
All your
right
contact
there.
Info. So yeah, so that's all you need to do.
You don't have to type in model numbers and all that kind of stuff.
I'm kind of intrigued by some of the. They also have a touchscreen fridge, I believe.
Yes.
And you can look up recipes and save your ingredient lists and send a shopping list to your cell phone. And
right.
And you can
do things like with some of these devices, you could do things like you have your – let's say you have your list of ingredients in your refrigerator. You can say, all right, well, based upon what's in my refrigerator, what can I make for dinner? And it'll pull up recipes that incorporate the stuff that it knows you have. Now, granted, you have to
input what you have.
Right, exactly. It doesn't automatically know when you put in a carton of milk.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
We're still waiting.
I want that.
Yeah, I want them to train the little elves whose job it is to turn off the light when you close the door to just write down what you've got in there.
Man, those are my favorite elves.
Yeah, they're great. They're right there with the Keeblers. So, who lived in a full house, as it turns out. The interesting thing is that you could also have an ecosystem where it sends that information, the recipe information, to your stove. So your stove, like, let's say that it involves that you're going to, let's say you're going to roast some vegetables because mm-hmm. that's what you have in there. You're like, oh, you know, roasted.
I'd love to roast some vegetables tonight.
Fantastic. And you push that button and it sends the information to the stove, which immediately begins to preheat to the appropriate temperature.
Wow.
So this way you've got this kind of ecosystem. Now here's the problem. This is my problem with smart appliances. And I've said this before.
Mm-hmm.
Most of these require that you buy into one ecosystem.
Oh, sure.
So you have to have all of your devices from the same manufacturer if you want it to have this interconnectivity to work. Otherwise, they're just going to be standalone devices. Now, most of these are fantastic standalone appliances anyway.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, you know, they're putting this kind of tech into their highest end,
right.
The highest end stuff.
Yes. But if you want to have that connectivity, then you have to end up investing in one ecosystem. My definition of smart is when we reach a level where you can buy your appliance from any of these vendors that are making these kind of devices and they all talk to each other. To me, that's what is smart, mm-hmm. at least from a consumer standpoint. Also, I don't know that there are that many people who could buy into an ecosystem and change all of their appliances at the same time. That's expensive.
That is.
You know, you're talking about refrigerator, washer, dryer, stove, TV. That's, I mean, TV is part of it too. Smartphone, but possibly.
It's getting into that prosumer kind of level.
Yeah, that's expensive. And my worry is you would start to adopt something, and then what happens if 3 years down the road, when you're about to upgrade the rest of your stuff, the company no longer exists?
Ooh, yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
So there's still some downsides to smart appliances. It'll be interesting to see where this goes. I hope we get to a more open standard for communication between devices.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, I'm excited about the concept of being able to use your smartphone to control anything in your house, from your television to your washer dryer
right.
to your light system to
yes.
et cetera. Just having a tricorder, you know, a glitch for those of you who watched Reboot, all 10 of you out there. Hi, I love you.
Yeah.
I'm
looking forward to that too. It's, I have some stuff that I can control with my smartphone, actually with my tablet, really, and that's like the Xbox. I have smart glass on my tablet,
cool. uh-huh.
and that's just a small hint of the type of stuff we can see in the future. And I agree, that's very exciting. So, that's the smart appliances, but there's so much more to talk about with CES. So, Lauren.
Yes, Jonathan.
It turns out that there was a lot of stuff at CES.
More than two things?
More than two things. Huh. And so doing one episode about all the things I saw and experienced at CES is a little much to ask our listeners to bear, because it would be really long. I think an hour and 7 minutes, actually.
Do you think about that much?
Yeah, according to the estimate that I kept going by asking Tyler. Yeah. So we decided we're going to split this episode up, as we sometimes do when they get so long that that's a thing. And we're going to conclude right here. But we'll be back in our next episode to conclude the stuff I saw at CES and some things that made the news while I was there. And so I highly recommend you guys tune in and hear how this adventure concludes. Will there be a happy ending, or did Jonathan get left at Las Vegas? I think we know the answer to that.
Yeah, that's not a mystery.
Okay, well, anyway, if you guys have any suggestions for future episodes of Tech Stuff, I highly recommend you let us know. Send us an email. Our address is techstuff@discovery.com. Drop us a line on Facebook or Twitter. Our handle there is TechStuffHSW, and Lauren and I will talk to you again about CES, as it turns out, really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
It's brand new, season 2. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back, having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining, from people you may know, like Vilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz, and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same 7 questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same 7 questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season 3 of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. 7 questions, limitless answers.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.